And now, due to popular demand, well, one person asked, this week we're going to talk about immigration on
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Hello and welcome. My name's Craig.
And my name's Reza.
With over 45 years of teaching English between us, Reza and I will help you improve your grammar, your pronunciation, and all aspects of your English and take it to the next level. Hello, Reza.
Hi, Craig. Have we got any feedback, Craig?
We certainly do, my friend. Thanks to Maite for sending us a voice message and a suggestion for this episode on immigration and homelessness. So let's listen to Maite's voice message now.
Hello, Greg and Reza. It's Maite again. I'm very fortunate to listen to your podcast every day at work. May you ask, how come? Because I can do it while working for a couple of hours. Well, firstly, I would like to thank you all your corrections and what's more, the way in which you explain it. Secondly, I like you to do a caring podcast about homeless people, immigrants, and other concerning issues. Thanks for everything.
Thank you very much for your message, Maite. And yes, immigration is a very interesting topic. It's a hot topic at the moment in the news. As we all know, I'm sure we see many stories on the TV or on internet and on the radio. We hear about Syrian refugees. We hear about Brexit, which is partly related to the number of immigrants in the UK, and some people are against it. And Donald Trump, of course, who has decided to have an extremely tough means duro, an extremely tough policy regarding immigrants in the United States.
Actually, yeah, it was interesting because just yesterday we were speaking about this on our weekly conversation chat, because I think I've mentioned this before that once a week I try to organize a chat on the internet using Zoom software, which is video conferencing software. And every week we speak about a different subject, a different topic. And Edu suggested that we speak about immigration, which we did yesterday. And it was a very, very interesting discussion. If you'd like to join us one week, you can find details on our Facebook page at facebook.com/mansioningles, or follow us on Twitter at mansiontwit. And I always post the link so that you can just join our chat and practice your speaking. And it's free, so it's free practice for you. But yeah, yesterday we spoke about immigration. What's the difference, Reza, between immigrate, IMM, and emigrate, starting with E-M.
Yeah, because the English pronunciation is strange, those words sound very similar in English, but they're not exactly the same. In fact, really, I guess they're opposites, because to immigrate, IMM, means to come into a country, whereas to emigrate, with letter E, emigrate, means to leave a country. So you emigrate from your original home country, and then you immigrate into a new country.
One thing that was interesting yesterday was someone asked the question, what's the difference between an immigrant and an expat? An expat is an expatriate. So it's very common in Spain, for example, to call people from Europe who have moved here expats. My parents, for example, they live in an expat community on the Costa Blanca. And yep, there's an expat community in Valencia. But can you see a difference between expat and immigrant?
Well, the use of the word the word expat would only really be used by another expat. A Spanish person's not going to say, let's talk about the expats in the Costa Blanca. No, they're going to say, let's talk about the British immigrants. Whereas a British person might say, let's talk about the British expats in the Costa Blanca, because they're referring to people of their own nationality. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's the person who's speaking the word. A Spanish person's not going to call your parents an expat. They're going to call them an immigrant.
I think that's true. That's very true. And another interesting point that someone made yesterday, I think it was David, who's from Cádiz. he was saying that an immigrant tends to be... No, it was Eduardo. I apologize. Eduardo said that immigrants tend to be poorer people who come from underprivileged countries, whereas an expat will be maybe from a richer, maybe a more affluent society.
Yeah, you associate expats with people who've chosen to retire to a country, or just because they like the climate or something like that, they want to go and live there, not really through necessity.
And another thing we said was that immigrants tend to be more emotionally invested in living in another country, whereas with an expat, maybe they're okay, they're living in another country, but they have the possibility to go back to their original country quite easily. And maybe they're not so invested emotionally in staying in the country permanently. That could be another difference.
So we've been talking about to immigrate and to emigrate, but we could use one word which could refer to both of those, which is to migrate. To migrate is just to move, like birds in winter. They migrate from one country to another. They don't emigrate because they don't have passports. Although, who knows, Donald Trump might stop Mexican birds at the border in the future. Let's see what happens. But migrate can be emigrate or immigrate, or neither, by the way, because it can be within a country. In fact, the biggest migration in recent years is neither immigration nor emigration. It's the movement of people from the Chinese countryside to the Chinese cities. That is the biggest single migrant activity of the last 20 years.
You're right. They're migrating looking for work in the city. So they're poor people from the countryside, maybe farmers, who are migrating to look for a better life in the cities. Yeah, that's true. But why do people emigrate? What are some of the reasons for emigration?
I think it's complicated. There can be a mixture of reasons. Sometimes the most obvious that comes to mind is to escape poverty. Mm-hmm. A lot of people from poor countries want to leave that country and go and live in a richer country, and you can't blame them. To escape war is another reason, and I guess poverty and war often go hand in hand. Where there's war, there tends to be poverty as well. Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Syria. Countries like that, Syria. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any other reasons?
It's possible they might want to. It's possible that they're under persecution, that they're being persecuted for ethnic or religious reasons. So because of their religion, they're being killed, or there's being violence. They're being violently oppressed, so that might be another reason to escape and move to a different country, or to get better opportunities in life, maybe a better job, a higher quality of life, a better standard of living is another reason to change countries. Education, maybe they want to educate themselves or their children to have better opportunities and prospects for the future.
Or it could be simply just because of a political system. In the past, we used to talk about defectors. Someone who defected was typically a person who left the Soviet Union, for example, the USSR, because they didn't like the communist political system. Perhaps they felt persecuted, or they just felt that they couldn't be themselves, and they defected to the West. They left the old political system.
Love could be a reason. You could meet somebody, fall in love, but that person is not from your country. That person is from a different country, and you emigrate with them to their country. That's quite common.
It's becoming more and more common. Mm-hmm. As of course people these days meet online on internet. So sometimes they fall in love, and then they meet in one country, so that means they decide to abandon either his or her country. Mm-hmm. To escape natural disasters is a very understandable reason for emigration. Volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis.
Yes.
You've got to get away.
What about learning a foreign language? I mean, that's not so common. Perhaps to learn a foreign language, you might stay in a country for a year or two.
Yep. I know someone who did it.
Really? Who?
Yeah, my dad.
Oh, right. But was it just to learn English that he emigrated to
not
the UK?
Just. We've already mentioned one of the reasons. He went, actually, he didn't emigrate. He went to study in the UK, to study at university. So the UK has a better education system than his country. My father's family are originally from India and Pakistan, both of those countries, a bit of a mixture. And he went to study in the UK. But one of the reasons was to improve his English, because he spoke very good English, but it wasn't his native language when he was being brought up. So he improved his English and he got a university degree.
But when he went to the UK, was his idea to stay there permanently?
No.
Or was it just a couple of years?
A couple of years and come back, yeah. But he really liked the country. And then we've mentioned another aspect. I'm afraid love got in the way. And he met my mum, who is from Ireland, and he decided he wanted to stay.
How long was he living in the country when he met your mum?
I think about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So he already knew the country a little bit.
But that was, he made the final decision when he met your mum and decided to settle down. To settle down means to stay in one place, make a home, make a life. The phrasal verb to settle down in a place.
Yeah. There's two stories. The one story is he was so in love that he simply couldn't leave her. And the other story is that she put a gun to his head and said, you're not going anywhere. He certainly didn't come for the climate. I can tell you that. He didn't emigrate to the UK for the climate.
Well, my parents did, funnily enough.
The UK?
No, from the UK.
Ah, all right, exactly.
They emigrated to Spain with my sister and my brother-in-law, partly for the climate, but partly because 20, 21 years ago, houses were a lot cheaper in Spain than in the UK. So when my parents retired, they really couldn't afford to buy a nice house in the UK, neither could my sister. So they decided to emigrate to Spain, partly for the weather, partly for the lifestyle, but mainly, I think, so they could have a nice retirement home and live in a country with a nice climate.
So to get to know Spanish culture wasn't their priority?
No, it never has been, unfortunately. That's one thing that really quite annoys me about my family, that they've never really made a big effort to integrate into Spanish culture, Spanish society, because they live in an expat area. So there are English people all around them. The shops, the restaurants, the businesses are mainly run by English, French, German people. So there isn't a big Spanish presence, whereas I came to Valencia, so it was a lot easier for me to integrate into Valencian Spanish lifestyle. Before we continue speaking about immigration, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Italki. What is Italki? Well, Italki is a website that will help you improve your English. Perhaps you feel you're improving by listening to Reza and I, but it's not really enough. You need a little bit of extra help, a private teacher. You can find one online with Italki. They have a huge list and variety of English teachers waiting for you there, from America, Australia, the UK, different accents, different cultural backgrounds. So whoever you feel like learning from, I'm sure you can find a teacher on Italki that would help you with your English. And if you'd like to know more about that, we invite you to go to our webpage at inglespodcast.com/Italki, where you can find more information. And if you sign up there, you will get a free lesson, more or less, 100 credits from Italki for signing up with us. And we'd like to say thank you to Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Greg. This is a question that we also talked about, Reza, yesterday. So I'm going to ask you, do you think there's a relation between immigration and crime?
Not necessarily. I believe there is a relation between poverty and crime. And I believe that a lot of immigrants are poor. So you're more likely to commit a crime if you suffer poverty because you need to eat. But I don't think the fact that you're an immigrant means you're more likely to commit crime. I think the fact that you're poor means you're more likely to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Although I do think there's a lot of crime among wealthy people. A wealthy person is a rich person, a person with money. They also commit crimes, but crimes of a different nature, different right. crimes. It's more tax evasion, right. Embezzlement, that kind of crime. But yeah, exactly. I agree with you.
Yeah. In fact, yeah, who knows? Rich people might even commit more crime than poor people. I don't know. But the type of crime that poor people commit is very obvious crime. It's stealing things. It's stealing food. It's pickpocketing, stealing things from your wallet, that type of thing. It's very obvious crime. You can see it on the street. Whereas tax evasion is not something easily detected.
If an immigrant is illegally in a country, do you think they should be deported? How should governments deal with illegal immigrants?
The very first thing they should do is they should be tough with their employers. Employers know when they're employing someone who's in the country illegally, and they shouldn't do it. They should only employ people who have the correct paperwork. There's only one reason, in my opinion, why employers employ illegal immigrants is because they can pay them far less money. And they know that the illegal immigrant cannot complain. So
I know some people in Valencia who are immigrants, and that they're being exploited because of that, which is really, really sad. They're being paid €2 or €3 an hour for working, which to me is disgusting.
Yeah, when the minimum wage in Spain is double or triple that.
It's eight, I think, 8 or 9. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that the big problem is not the illegal immigrant working illegally. It's the employer who may be a local person or could be a foreigner as well, because other foreigners exploit foreigners in foreign countries. But whoever it is, they should be the people that we really try to catch first for employing people illegally and exploiting them. Because apart from anything else, they drive down everybody else's wages.
What does drive down mean?
Empujan a la baja, to drive down. Because by employing more and more illegal immigrants, it's different if they're legal. But illegal immigrants, it means that salaries go down for everybody because we have to compete with the illegal immigrants. And it's not their fault. In my opinion, it's the fault of the unscrupulous, sin escrupulos, unscrupulous employers who employ them.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree.
But you asked me a question that I still haven't really answered. Should illegal immigrants be deported? In my opinion, not for the fact that they're simply illegal. No.
Does it depend on the reason that they came to the right. country in the first place?
Exactly. I think we should look into each case. So even if you arrived in a country illegally and you know you've come illegally, I don't think you should necessarily be deported, because where are they going to send you back to? Send you back to Syria? But there's a high chance that you'll be killed there. There's a civil war going on. So I don't think you should deport someone just because they've entered illegally. However, this may surprise you, I take a really hard line, very hard line, and I'm the son of an immigrant, on people who commit, foreigners or illegal immigrants who commit crime in their host country. I think we should be extremely tough with them. Mm-hmm. If an illegal immigrant commits a serious crime, I would deport them as soon as possible. I think we're far too soft on them, and I think it's quite right to deport people who have committed violent crime, rape, murder, should be very quickly deported and never let back into a country. That's my view.
I agree, because if they go into the prison system, then that costs the taxpayers money.
Yep.
And they're not really part of the country. What about an immigrant who comes from, say, North Africa into Spain or Eastern Europe into Spain? Not because there's a war or anything, but because they want a higher standard of living, a better standard. Maybe they're living on the poverty line. The poverty line is the line between maybe living or dying, having enough money for food, really, really close to having a serious problem because they don't have money. If they came to Spain, would you send them back?
Well, that's a very tricky question, Craig. That's
because it's not, they haven't come from a country that's at war, but if you send them back, you're sending them back to poverty.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very hard question to answer. They are the most difficult for me to answer those cases, because I think people from war-torn regions should definitely be allowed to stay because they face real danger in their own country. and people who have come illegally who are very, very rich. There's no reason why they should stay because they were very rich. It's the people in the middle. That's tricky to decide from poor countries, but there's no war.
It happened a lot from people from Cuba who went to the United States to get a better life, basically, and they tried to illegally arrive by boat from Cuba.
Well, I don't want to get into a political debate, and I don't want to upset any of our listeners, but get a better life, yeah, maybe not get a better healthcare system, but get a better life.
Or maybe not get better education either.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah, a lot more freedom, etc. Maybe escape political persecution, but you know, particularly with Donald Trump now, oh, we're talking politics, healthcare, if I was very sick and I lived in Cuba, I wouldn't be rushing to go to America right now. It's a tricky question.
I wouldn't be rushing to go there either. But what about...
Craig, to give you the best answer I can, I think we should prioritize. So people where they're, who come from an area where there's war or persecution or political or religious should be given priority, I think. And then after that, what we call financial immigrants, they should come second. That's my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I think that's sensible because there has to be a limit. And that's what happened, I think, with Germany. Germany accepted many immigrants during the war with Iraq and the war with Syria. But at some point, they had to draw the line and say, okay, we're closing the borders because there's a limit to how many immigrants a country can accept.
I didn't agree with the German policy. I thought it was stupid. And I've had arguments with my German friends about it because I used to live in Berlin. It's stupid. First come, first serve. That's stupid. It's unfair.
Yeah, it should be for priority.
Everybody got in who got in, and now they've closed the border. And now you can't get in. It's too late. So some of the people who got in shouldn't be there. And some, I don't think the Germans did it very well, is my opinion.
What do you think is the reputation that immigrants have in Spain? Do they have in your experience, do they have a good reputation as people who are helping the Spanish economy and contributing to the country?
In my opinion, yes. But I imagine some Spanish people disagree. There are some Spanish people who I think believe that their jobs and their well-being are under threat because of immigration. I don't agree with them, but I think some people believe that. But in a very racist way, because we're foreigners in Spain, but people don't really feel threatened by us because we were brought up in the UK. It's a relatively rich country. They're not frightened. But some people, sadly, are suspicious of some South Americans in Spain. I don't agree with them, but they think, ooh, they've come here just to get more money, and because of them, maybe I can't get a job. I don't think it's true, but some people maybe think that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you had that perception from some people?
Yeah. Well, I get a mixture. I get a mixture of feelings from Spanish people. Some are positive, some are not so positive. Generally speaking, though, I think the people I've had contact with, at least in Valencia, are very sympathetic to immigrants from other countries. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think with what's happening in the news at the moment, that might change soon. But it depends, I think, if people can look at the news and filter it in a way that's logical and sensible. I think we really have to be careful of the messages that we're getting from the TV these days.
I'd be really interested to hear from our listeners who live in South America about immigration in South America. I'm talking about people who go to South America from other countries. I don't know much about it. I don't know much about immigration in South America. Are there many people going to live in South America, or are there people going from one country to another?
Not many. Yesterday I was speaking with Johanna, who's from Ecuador, and she was saying in Ecuador that the immigration tends to be from Ecuador to Spain, not from Spain to Ecuador. And she also said something very interesting, that was a lot of Ecuadorians who came to Spain to work a few years ago have since gone back to Ecuador because of the financial crisis here in Spain.
Yes. Yeah. That might be the case of my friend Vero, whose mother introduced me to Aji. She went back to Ecuador because her prospects were better there than in Spain after a few years.
And she's still there. Yeah. She hasn't come back again.
And she's very happy. Hmm. Yeah. But I wonder, do South Americans move a lot from one country to another? For example, or I should say Latin American. I know that from some very poor countries like Haiti, Haiti, you say in Spanish, people want to leave and they'd be prepared to go to any other Latin American country. But I wonder, is that very common? Do people leave Bolivia and go to, I don't know, Brazil? Do people leave Brazil and go to Argentina? I don't know much about that, to be
no,
honest.
No, me neither. That'd that would be nice to know. If you're listening from one of the Latin American countries, please send us an email or a voice message and let us know what's happening in your part of the world. Multicultural or integrated society, which is preferable, which is better to have? Because the UK now has become very multicultural, hasn't it? With lots of different cultures living in different areas.
In my opinion, and although it sounds big-headed, I feel I have a lot of right to talk about it since my father was an immigrant to the UK and I'm the son of an immigrant. I think a bit of both. But I don't like the idea of multiculturalism taking over a country if that country loses its original identity. So I think that immigrants should try to integrate into our country's culture, but without losing their original country's identity. They can combine both. It can be done. In fact, the history of the world is just that. The history of the world. I mean, think about England. What do people think of when they think of England? They think of an Anglo-Saxon country. Well, look, that's already a combination, Anglo and Saxon. We're all mixtures. Combination is has happened since the beginning of time. So I think a bit of both.
But surely that's kind of going against what you said, because if it's going to if a country's identity is going to change over the years with immigration and over time, then surely you should just let it happen, not try to keep any sort of nationalistic cultural identity.
But slowly, let it happen slowly. What I'm saying is I don't like the idea of lots of people coming to a country and not trying to integrate at all and just living the way they did in their own country, and more of them arrive and none of them try to integrate. That will change greatly the face of a country. For example, I don't like the idea that there may be, you know, areas of Britain where you're expected to behave in a way which, for example, some strict Muslims find acceptable. That bothers me, me molesta, you know, and I have some Muslim relations, but I don't see why in the United Kingdom, for example, women should have to dress in a way which won't bother Muslim sensibilities. Why should they? They're not in Pakistan or Iran or Saudi Arabia, and they should dress however they feel comfortable anywhere in the United Kingdom. And if a British Muslim doesn't like it, well, bad luck. Sorry if it sounds bad, because they're not obliged to live in the UK. So yes, they can adhere to their customs if they like, but I don't like the idea of them trying to change the local customs. That bothers me. I don't like that. They should keep their own but integrate and not try and change. That's the way I look at it.
How integrated do you feel in Spanish society and culture?
Really very integrated, I feel. What about you?
Integrated, not very. I feel comfortable. I feel I don't feel 100% at home here, but I never feel 100% at home anywhere. I never felt 100% at home in the UK. There are things about the UK culture and society that feel very normal and comfortable to me, but I never feel 100% at home there. So because I've moved around, because I've traveled, I've kind of learned to integrate to a point, but I don't think I've ever felt 100% at home anywhere, if
that
makes sense.
What is home, Craig? Can you define home?
Well, again, yesterday, Bea, who was in the chat, said home is where the heart is. And I agree with that. It's not necessarily where you were born. It's not necessarily connected to perhaps your religious beliefs, because you could move and travel with that and migrate with your religious beliefs. But it's probably where your heart is, where maybe where your family is, maybe where your affections lie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the old saying is true. Home is where the heart is. It's as simple as that. I can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. Greg, we've been talking a lot about the effect of immigration on the country where people come to, economic, social, cultural. But what about the effect of emigration on the country where people leave? For example, can you explain what brain drain is? Have you heard of that?
Brain drain, I know more from companies. When a company is very successful, for example, let's say Microsoft, and they have a lot of really experienced and talented technical technicians, software designers and technicians, when another company starts to take them away or they decide to leave to go to work for another company, then that's called a brain drain. So the best workers or the best people, maybe the best people who are contributing to the country or to the company decide to leave, then drain is desagüe. So they're leaving and going somewhere else. And where they have left then suffers as a result.
Exactly. So that happens to countries. It's a term which used to be used a lot in Ireland. Ireland suffered from brain drain because Ireland is a curious country. It's very similar to Spain. For many decades, there was only emigration out of Ireland. Irish people left, some Irish people, not all, to go to countries like America, Canada, Australia, England. But not really anybody came in. But now that's different. Now there's immigration in Ireland. But in the past, there was brain drain. So Ireland did have some quite well-educated people with certain special skills. They spoke English. And a lot of them thought that they could only really have a good career as or as much money as they would like in countries like America. And they left just because they knew they could make more of their skills there. And it affected then the Irish economy because they trained the people to be good. But then as soon as they were very good, they left and went to countries where they could make more money. Yeah. And of course, this happens in poorer countries.
Yeah, but it's come full circle, you said. So now Ireland's not suffering because a lot of people have gone back there, or fresh people with something to offer have gone to live in Ireland.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about that? Should a person be allowed to emigrate, to leave their country whenever they want? Let's take an example. A doctor who's been trained in the National Health Service. So obviously they're not going to be American, but let's say British or Spanish or something like that. So they've been trained publicly with public money for 10 years, something like that, 12 years. Costs a lot of money to make them a good doctor. Now they're a good doctor. Should they be allowed to just leave the country whenever they want? What about all the money for their training?
Well, they should be allowed unless they're made to sign a contract. Of course, the government could make them sign a contract, in which case they knew before what they would be committing to and agreeing to. But if there's no contract signed, then yeah, because that's freedom of movement, which is really important. You can't hold somebody somewhere against their will unless legally they've agreed to sign a contract, and that's part of the deal.
Okay, well, let's presume there is no contract. Do you think they have a moral obligation to, in a way, pay back their country for all the money that was spent on their education by the government?
They may feel, but if they felt the moral obligation, then they wouldn't go in the first place. That's a very personal thing. I wouldn't necessarily feel a moral obligation. No, because I would assume that I've paid my taxes as well in that country. So,
but there are cases where people have only studied, and as soon as they finish their studies, they go. So they haven't really paid many taxes. They've absorbed more tax money than they've paid. It does happen.
So you're thinking then that they have an obligation to stay there?
I'm asking you what you think.
No, I don't think so. I think if the government were concerned about this, then they would make them commit to staying at least 4 or 5 years or whatever in the country. Then,
it happens in some countries.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
There are laws. Needless to say, Cuba, that won't surprise anybody. A doctor, a nurse just can't leave like that. No, they have to work a certain number of years before they're allowed to leave. But in other countries as well, you're obliged to stay for a while.
That's probably fair. But if there's no contract in place, then obviously they can leave.
Should immigrants be forced to learn about the culture or language of the new country?
Ooh, forced,
by law.
Forced is a hard word. Forced. No. No, I don't think so.
Do you think it's undemocratic to force people? Because they are forced in America, and we consider America a democratic country. And by law, to get American citizenship, you have to pass an extremely difficult test.
That most Americans probably wouldn't pass.
Would fail. You've got to do things like name the 22nd American president. You know, it's not easy. And foreigners have to do that to get American citizenship and know all the lines of the national anthem. And you know what I mean?
I think encouraged is a nicer word than forced. I mean, I don't think I would pass an exam on Spanish history or culture if I were given one. But I don't think I'm a negative influence on Spanish society. So I think I've got a good right to be here, even though maybe I should know more things about Spain and Spanish politics and Spanish history. No, I don't think people should be made to pass an exam to stay in a country. What about you?
No, not forced, no.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one more question for our listeners? All our listeners, but particularly our Mexican ones. Here's the question. Is it a good idea to build a wall on the USA-Mexico border, as Donald Trump plans? And should the Mexicans pay for it, as he quite incredibly demands? I would be delighted to hear from our Mexican listeners what they think about that.
But of course they're not going to think it's a good idea. What, I mean, would you expect any Mexican to say it's a good idea?
No.
Of course not. But you want to ask it anyway?
Yeah, I want to hear what they say about it.
Okay. Okay. Well, what's your opinion? Are you for Trump's idea to build a wall or against it? You can send us an email to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And remember also, we love to get your voice messages. So if you have a strong opinion or even a weak opinion on any of the points we've discussed in this podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So you can leave your 90-second voice message at SpeakPipe, that's SpeakPipe.com/Inglés podcast. And if you'd like more detailed show notes for these podcasts, we invite you to go to Patreon.com/Inglés podcast and join our Patreon program. We'd like to thank our lovely Patreons who are Lara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Sara Jarabo, Cory, Manuel, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Daniel, Manuel Tarazona, Mariel Riedemann, Maite, Rorena, and Pedro. Thank you so much to all of you for your continued support. We'd also like to thank Arminda from Madrid for continuing to transcribe the episodes. And full transcriptions are now available for episodes 131, 134, 135, and 136. Until next week, we say goodbye. Reza, what's on next week's agenda?
On next week, we hope to be talking about 10 more phrasal verbs that you should know.
So, come back next week, and until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. Before we continue discussing immigration,
oh, shit.
Razor's going to hit the microphone.
I'm going to make a loud noise.